there's an initiative that came across through someone on our advisory board, which I thought was really good, and we do is 5 minutes with, in this case, Melanie, me. I give a slot of time to the team once a month if there's anything that they want to bring to my attention, if they don't feel comfortable talking with their line management or anything else. And then I just think it's just putting those regular checkups in general, you know, and taking the time to do the thinking throughout the week. Set some time aside on a regular basis.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and a very warm welcome to episode 72 of the podcast. In this episode, we are joined by Melanie Chevalier, who is the founder and CEO at Creative Culture. In her bio, Melanie says she has built her career on challenging the status quo of internationalization and traditional models to offer a much more effective and qualitative approach by bringing local cultures back to the fore to feed globally led initiatives. She is a proud award winner of the 2021 Female Frontiers Championing Change category, which celebrates women constantly pushing the boundaries of equality, gender balance, and making dynamic changes within their work. Melanie is very active in promoting equality, diversity, and inclusion, and has developed innovative initiatives to allow brands to successfully navigate complex inclusion pieces within an even more complex and diverse multicultural environment. With over 15 years of industry experience in trans creation, cross-cultural communications and strategy, Melanie has been advising international brands such as Barclays Wealth, GlaxoSmithKline, Johnson & Johnson, L'Oreal Luxe, Maserati, Urban Decay, the list goes on, just to name a few for you there. And besides cross-cultural matters and trans creation, her passion is her two gorgeous bilingual boys and the art of getting things done. But let's get back to this episode and my conversation with Melanie, in which we discussed, amongst many other things, as is always the case, how her leadership style and indeed the services that her company provides have both been shaped by her international upbringing. Alongside this and many other topics, we also spoke about her approach to getting the right balance between achieving success at work and also still having the time and energy to enjoy all that life has to offer. So, without any further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Melanie Chevalier. Melanie, a very warm welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you with us today. And first of all, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much. And thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Melanie, let's dive straight in with the first question that I tend to ask guests on the show, which is, I think I often say, an easy question to ask, but maybe not a particularly easy one to answer, which is simply, what does leadership mean to you?
Well, as you say, not an easy one to answer, but a really interesting one. I think leadership really is the ability of someone to lead a group of people towards one same goal and ambition. And through that, I think many, many different elements are required. I mean, the first one relates to influence and inspiration. You know, how do you have this ability to influence your peers and the team that you manage, inspire them to aim for the same goal? There's a lot of empathy and listening as well, I think. There's a lot of to be said about, you know, understanding the people you work with, where they're at, and how you can best support them. Another element I would say is agility. So really it being able to change your management style according to the people that you work with. From the background and the work I do, obviously the cultural element is very big. People from different countries work in different ways. They like to be managed in different ways as well. But there's also personality, there's background experience, personally and professionally. So I think treating people as one and always adapting your style is really super important. And then going back to the beginning, I think more importantly, it's about defining what the ambition is and, you know, why do we all get out of bed in the morning? Because without this, you can't really lead people in the same direction as you. So we have to share the same ambition and goal and see what that means to each and one of us. And then I guess the last one, but this is also because you know, I've always worked in small companies, mine now for the last 14 years, but before that it was also a small company. And I think leading by example and getting your hands dirty gets you a long way. So obviously leaders need to think rather than do in general on a day-to-day basis, but equally demonstrating to the team that you're there to get your hands dirty when they need you to, and helping them throughout the way really builds the foundation to trust and being a great leader, I think.
It's interesting you mentioned empathy and listening there, Melanie. I think those are two traits I've heard leaders talk about much more in the past few years, but they're two traits that personally I believe have always been really important in terms of leadership. Have they always been a focal area for you, or kind of throughout your career as you've grown as a leader, have you found that you've placed more importance on those?
I think I'm empathetic by nature and I like people and I like listening to people. So this came very naturally. I don't think I've worked at it in a structured manner. It was just very natural. But I've also been on the other side, and I've also been in places where I didn't feel listened to, and I didn't feel there was always the levels of empathy for versus the amount of work that you need to go through when you're in a small company. You know, it's all a lot more intense. You have to work more. There's a lot at stake. So it's how you counterbalance this. So I think it was more led by personal experience as well as, you know, naturally having that empathetic side of my personality.
Yeah, I think that's often the case, right? That we learn a lot about leadership, about good leadership, from the bad examples that we see, I think, and not wanting to replicate some of the bad stuff, I think.
Yeah, and it's a personality thing. I think at the end of the day, if you're somebody who is sensitive, you'll always be more inclined to understanding, you know, other people's feelings and how things can impact them versus if you're not and you don't actually question it.
And Melanie, you mentioned a few minutes back sort of what you do and having always worked for small companies. Would you mind sharing sort of the journey kind of you've been on, and then perhaps two or three of the sort of most significant leadership lessons you think you've picked up and learned along the way?
Sure. So prior to setting up Creative Culture, I worked in a small business. And when I started, it was four of them, two of which were a couple, the founders. So very small indeed. And we grew the business to a team of circa 40 people in the period of time I was there, which was roughly 5 years or so. And I was very much involved in that process. And during that period of time, I learned all the tricks of business, the ground up, from project management, accounting, new business, account management. It was a bit of a school of life experience type scenario. And it was obviously very informative and rewarding in that sense. Without that experience, I don't think I would have started my own business, actually, because I don't come from an entrepreneurial background in terms of my family or inspirations. And it gave me the confidence I needed to know that I actually could do that and I could lead, you know, the business across. So that was really, really good. In terms of the lessons, I think the first one is around confidence. I think in terms of leadership, and particularly for women, confidence is absolutely key. And, you know, I'm part of WACL, which is Women in Advertising and Communication Leadership. And as part of this, I give some time every month to mentor some women who are aspiring leaders, some of which are already, but they just don't know that they are leaders already. And it's really interesting because confidence is the main challenge and the main obstacle to overcome, particularly for women. And I think without this, it's very difficult to lead, because you will always be, you need to question yourself, but you can't question the fact that you're doing the right thing for the right reasons for the people. So confidence is the first one as a key sort of factor. The second one I learned is that this confidence needs to be balanced with humility and sincerity. I think there's a lot to be said about being yourself, being passionate. People see through other people who, you know, and leaders who are playing a strategy game or who are in it for themselves. And I don't think you can inspire and get a team behind you if that's what you're in. If you're in it just for yourself, it's not going to work, I think. And then the last one, I think, is never to underestimate the power of good leadership on performance, retention, business growth, reputation, all of these elements that are so important, particularly when you're leading a business, of course. And I think as leaders, we get too caught in the moment. We are always extremely busy. And, you know, most people fail to think back and look at how they're impacting their team, whether positively or negatively, what that means, and how that has an impact on the wider organization, basically.
How do you guard against that then, on that last piece? Because I think you're absolutely right. So many so many of us, regardless probably of whether we're a leader or not, can get caught in the moment, sucked into the doing and the execution, head down. And again, so easily can forget to pause and step back and look up. I mean, that's a particular challenge when you're running a small business, right? When it can be very sort of hands-on and there's so much to do and limited resource. So how do you kind of manage that personally and find the time and the space to step back?
I think it's putting it in the calendar. It's just as basic as that. I think it's just finding the time to set some time aside on a regular basis with the teams, with management, because obviously if you have other people helping you manage the teams, they will be a really good person to give you a bit of a nudge and make sure that you take that time. There's an initiative that came across through someone on our advisory board, which I thought was really good, and we do is 5 minutes with, in this case, Melanie, me, where I give a slot of time to the team once a month if there's anything that they want to bring to my attention, if they don't feel comfortable talking with their line management or anything else, which opens already, the door to the conversation with people. Obviously, because it's in the calendar, I absolutely stick to it. And then I just think it's just putting those regular checkups in general, you know, and taking the time to do the thinking throughout the week. Particularly after COVID, we're all completely torn between being on back-to-back meetings all the time, which is extremely counterproductive in terms of the thinking time. So I now have a day a week where people can't book any meetings, and that's when I do my thinking.
Wow. And how easy has it been to protect that space?
You have to be good. It is it's a good habit to get started with. But yeah, it's just sticking to it and knowing that the other 4 days in the week will be quite manic, but you have that one day for the thinking.
And are you naturally quite a disciplined person? Because like, I think a lot of leaders, busy people, probably have similar aspirations to carve out and protect thinking time. Probably lots of other people block thinking time in their diary. But equally, I think lots of people probably end up then accepting meetings or filling that time with other stuff because the urgent stuff always steals our time. So I'm just wondering, like, how you actually make that work. Is it because you are naturally very, very disciplined, or do you have to kind of fight and work hard to protect it? Like, what's that actually like for you on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis?
It's not easy, but I am disciplined. So I guess it is easier for me than it might be for other people, because I just stick to it. When I have my mind set on something, I just stick to it.
Okay. Can you tangibly like see the benefits that you're getting from carving out that time to pause and think? So I guess the question here is maybe for those that are a bit skeptical of taking time out to stop and think because there's just so much going on and I should just be getting stuff done. I haven't possibly got time to think. Like, can you see the very tangible benefits that it brings for you and the business?
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that I've learned throughout the last 15 years, and I wasn't doing it at the beginning. And I think I lost a lot of time not doing it. And ever since I started doing it, we've, you know, developed so many initiatives in the business. You know, we've just gone through a whole business strategy over the last couple of months that, you know, was partly led from having the time to do the thinking. We've built lots of great initiatives internally and, you know, training programs and things that we would literally never have time to do if we didn't stick to the slot and the thinking time, basically. So I think it's the impact is incredible. So it is definitely worth the time. And I guess start small is always the way, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't think that you can block a whole day, then start with 4 hours and then see how you get on, see the results from that, and then move on to the whole day scenario if you can.
Yeah. And if you can't do 4 hours, start with an hour, right? Just start small, start where you're at, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the fact as well, you say you've probably lost time in the past from not doing it. That really resonates with me. I just think if we aren't slowing down and pausing to reflect and plan, we could end up chasing our tail or going down the wrong avenues or missing opportunities or like being a busy fool, right? We're working really, really hard. We might be working really efficiently, but could be working really efficiently on the wrong things. And being efficient and effective aren't the same thing, are they? I think effectiveness is doing the right things. Efficiently is doing, you could be doing the wrong things, but doing them very, very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just not taking the time to reflect on what could be done better or differently. And that's, you know, there are huge opportunities in doing this. And I started really a year and a bit ago during COVID with someone senior on our team who's been with us for 10 years now. And her and I just never had time to speak and look into things because she's client service director, obviously extremely busy on client requests, and it's always last minute, everything's super urgent. I'm very busy with leading the business on a commercial side. And actually we set a 1 hour session a week that we stuck to, and we developed so many really interesting initiatives throughout the business, from thought leadership to, you know, internal initiatives, and it's been so productive. So definitely worth trying and sticking to it.
Yeah, amazing. And Melanie, I understand you've lived and worked all around the world, and clearly that's had an impact and influence on the actual business that you now lead. How would you say sort of that international, global experience and perspective you've got has shaped you as a leader?
Immensely. I mean, I think my upbringing is the absolute foundation of who I am today, both personally and professionally, you know, as a mother, as a CEO, as a friend, as a leader. And it's one big life experience that I can never thank my parents enough for. So I was raised around the world in countries like Taiwan, Brazil, Cameroon. I only spent 11 years in France, which is my mother country, and then moved on to living in Spain. And I've spent the last 17 years in the UK. So I've been in London more than anywhere else before that. And it is a pretty cross-cultural, multinational sort of place to live as well. So it's always shaped my way of thinking, my emotional intelligence and sensitivity, I think, and that awareness of difference in people, and how it's really, really interesting to embed this and to work into different frameworks for clients. So as you said, you know, looking at what we do for clients in general, which is trying to help them navigate all these cultural differences through all the initiatives they lead within businesses. I think often people think of the world as becoming more global, and I feel the world is actually becoming more pluricultural. You know, adds complexity in one sense, because we're all mixing. So on top of it being global and opening across multiple countries, we're also mixing lots of different cultures together, which is fascinating. So it adds complexity, but in one sense, it also adds richness and, you know, nuance and granularity. And I think that's what good leadership needs to inspire from. As I was saying earlier on, this agility and this ability to adapt to this is really quite important. A lot of studies demonstrate how diversity of thinking and experience is very beneficial to performance, you know, creative thinking in teams. So it's all about seeing this and seeing how you can convert this into an opportunity, basically, within the teams. And in terms of specifically, I think it's always shaped my way of working with the team. So we do every month across the department what we call team improvement meetings. So every team gathers and looks at how they can improve the way we work for clients, for themselves, new tools, new processes. And it's just this ability to give everyone a voice to contribute and to challenge the status quo. So I think this is a personal trait more than I think internationally, you know, but it's always thinking that there are different ways of doing things, and we need to challenge that with ourselves, with our clients. And I think if you speak to anyone on the team, they will tell you this is very much how I lead the business and the people. And then, yeah, this flexibility and adaptability, I think, is the biggest thing I take out of it.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by those team improvement meetings. Can you tell us a little bit more about those?
Yeah, so once a month, everyone from each of the teams or departments, whether you're client, you know, client team, new business, PR, HR people, talent acquisition and so on, they gather once a month, and basically we just run through things that everyone come across on a regular basis, you know, challenges that you faced, or new tools or new processes that you thought about, something that you've learned on a client project, or, you know, on an experience on an interview. And it's about just putting it to the fore and saying, well, why shouldn't we think about doing this in a different way moving forward? And, you know, what would it bring to the business? What would it bring to us as a team to being more effective and more efficient? And so, yeah, we keep those a bit like the calendar reminders I mentioned before. It's just having it in the calendar, sticking to it. And a lot comes out of this because new joiners have seen different things, different ways of working. They can really bring a lot to the team.
Yeah.
But also everyone has different perspectives. So you bring this to the fore, and it's about opening the conversation and always aim to doing better, basically. Mm-hmm.
And how long do they typically last, those meetings?
Well, they're set for an hour. We overrun regularly, but they're set for an hour.
And that's each team doing that as a team together?
Yeah, exactly.
And do you have a mechanism as well then for the sort of the cross-team kind of teamwork in and working across kind of functions and silos, or does that naturally get captured when it gets sort of fed up into the leadership team? How does that piece work, if at all?
This one is work in progress. So we've improved a lot over the years, but it's difficult because we're very time poor. I think everyone is, but particularly in small businesses, everyone is very, very time poor. But we do, again, across some teams, we have this sort of cross-pollination element where bi-monthly there are updates of this is what's happening in our team, this is what we've been working on that you should be aware of that could be really beneficial to you. And the people sharing are the ones sort of saying, this is how I think it could benefit you. Perhaps for the client team, you could be sharing this with your clients because they'll be really interested, and vice versa, basically. So we're trying to proactively get the funnels open between the teams. But that, I think, is the most difficult one because of time more than anything. It's not wanting to do it, but eventually you can't just fill in the calendar with updates every single day of the week, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you'd spend the entire working week just doing improvement meetings and never actually delivering and executing anything. Yeah, but I mean, it's amazing that you have those in every month. And again, it really resonates with a lot of my beliefs. I have this really strong belief that team development, team improvement, team building, it's not something that we do once a year offsite at a nice hotel. It's something that has to be consistently worked on all of the time. And I just kind of I've loved hearing about kind of how that's working in your business. It makes me realize I'm not just some consultant who doesn't live in the real world. When I hear stories of businesses actually doing that and putting that real focus on constantly growing, improving, getting better within the teams that we work, it's amazing.
Sticking to it is the most difficult, as you raised earlier on with the other topic, I think.
Yeah. Well, lots of people have said, haven't they? It's not what we do occasionally that makes a difference, but what we do day in, day out. So consistency really is key to anything. And we touched on leadership, your leadership team a few moments ago. I think it's probably fair to say you've got a fairly unique leadership team. Can you tell us a little bit about your top team?
Yeah, sure. So we as a business are women owned as an organization, and we're certified by WeConnect International, and management is 100% female. And in fact, the whole team is 95% female. So very much a fully female team as a whole. And I think it's got a lot to do with our area of expertise, of course, because, you know, we combine languages to cultures and elements that attract women more naturally in general. So it's not been necessarily the will to not have any male within the team. Obviously, I've been raised with boys and I have mostly men in my family, actually, when I look at my cousins and everything. So I don't have any issues with that really at all. But I think by nature, the business is one that attracts a lot of women. But also, you know, we've set our own standards and ways of working throughout the years. And I think that resonates with female as a whole. You know, as a woman and a mom, I think we have a different approach to being surrounded by people, being empathetic of their situation. We have different management styles. Our current MD is a single mom of three, and I think, and she is a hero, needless to say, obviously. And I think what attracted her about creative culture is this understanding that, you know, we as women can also lead great initiatives, be given responsibilities, we can make the right decisions. And I love the idea that we're helping all these young women, you know, build their confidence and their career to become great leaders. I think it's a really great sort of framework. But all in all, we are very aware that diversity is also about having more than just the one gender in the team. And we're working really hard towards that as well.
Yeah. And how was the whole COVID lockdown experience for you and your business? Kind of how did that pan out?
It was really interesting, actually, as a process. I think we've taken a lot of positives out of it because, like a lot of businesses, we now know how to have a much more flexible approach to work, which I think in terms of well-being for employees is super important. And it was a model that was by definition challenging to get remotely because the team is very young, very hands-on, and they need to cross-pollinate. So how do you do this when everyone is working remotely is a big, big question we had at the beginning, but they've done amazing. It's really, really done amazingly. The business has grown a lot during that period, which, you know, sort of showcases how well everyone's done, of course. If your point was around the gender element, obviously, because the team is fairly young, we didn't have too many challenges related to women, you know, having their own families and so on. So that wasn't a challenge that we had to deal with, apart from, you know, two or three of us. But yeah, no, it's just, we've learned the positives of it. Now we need to keep at the good habits, you know, making sure that as we go back to a hybrid world, we don't keep on doing back to back to back, you know, crazy hours. Teach people how to have a good habit of knowing when it's time to relax and do a bit of resting around that.
Yeah. And that's a lovely lead in, actually, Melanie, to what I wanted to ask you next. I think like being a leader is a busy, demanding job. I think kind of being a leader in your own business or a small business is probably even more demanding and can potentially make it harder to switch off. So how do you approach that? What do you do to look after yourself? How do you find the balance? How do you recharge?
It's a very good question, and I think I'm guilty not to look after myself enough, to be completely honest. But I am a very active person, I guess more mentally and intellectually than physically. And I'm a workaholic by nature. So, you know, I probably don't do enough to look after myself in general, but I get the energy from the people in general and from being busy and buzzing. So there is also that, you know, I'm not the sort of person to go and lock myself in the room and do meditation, because I just like being active and I feed from other people, really socializing, being with friends. That's my way of relaxing. The real balance point, I think, is about, I heard this many years ago and it really resonated with me. It's about being 100% present wherever you are, whenever you're there, basically. And I think as a woman and a mother, it's super important to ensure that, you know, when I'm at work, I'm 100% focused, but equally when I'm with my family and my kids, it's the same. You know, I'm not looking at my phone, I'm not looking at my emails, and I, you know, learn to switch off completely so that there is no sort of blurred lines, and that helps you recharge. And yeah, the last thing is music. I love music and it's really part of the experience and it helps. I work with music. I, you know, cook with music. I relax with music, and it's a really important place. I love live events, also really great to recharge batteries. So I guess it's just as a person finding what does it for you and not think, ooh, you know, I'm not doing what all the others are doing to look after themselves. It's what works for you, really.
Yeah. I can tell you love music, but listeners won't, but I can see the Sonos speaker, I think, on your windowsill there. So there's a giveaway.
Exactly.
Do you have particular go-to music? Do you kind of use music quite strategically? Do you have certain playlists if you're doing certain tasks, or is it just kind of, you just love having some background music on?
I have a couple of bands that I really, really like, and everyone laughs at me. At least they think of me when they hear them, but I have this couple of bands that make me really concentrate. We're the most unlikely types of music for concentration. But then I also like to listen to world music, things like Cuban music and jazz and things like that really help me focus. 50s rock music as well, rock and roll really helps. It's just whatever will get my train of thought focused.
Amazing. Melanie, it's time for a couple of quick fire questions to bring things to a close. And you've probably touched on this already, but I wonder if you've got a slightly different view based on events of the past few years. But what do you think are perhaps three key traits that will help leaders be really successful in the world we currently find ourselves living and leading in?
Yeah, I think I touched upon that at the beginning, you know, when you asked me about my view on leadership. I think empathy and listening is a really big one. And, you know, we're in an era where people more than ever need support and they need listening. And if you don't do that, then nothing is going to happen, because you're not fulfilling your role as a leader to people, as opposed to leader to a business. So I think that's a really important one. Knowing how to influence and inspire is also a big one, because, you know, at the end of the day, and more and more with the younger generations, and they're absolutely right, it's about knowing why you spend all these hours of every day, you know, at work, and why you're doing it for. So if you don't have that sorted, it's probably time to look into it.
And what would you say is the one book that's had the biggest or most significant impact upon you?
Related to leadership?
Yes, and also if there's one that's kind of more broad as well.
Good question. So for leadership, I know which one, because this is a fairly recent thing I've gone through. It's Find Your Why. I'm sure you would have heard about it, doing what you do as a consultant.
So Simon Sinek.
Yep, Simon Sinek. I think, you know, it goes back to what I was saying about, you know, knowing why you get up in the morning and having a very clear sight of this, because at the end of the day, if that message is clear to you, it will be clear to your teams, and then they know why they follow you and they know why they're part of it. But actually helping them to find their why, at the moment I'm distributing it among our team because I thought it was a really good exercise. But, you know, it makes life decisions so much easier when you know what your values are, what you stand for. So that's been a big, big life-changing one, I think. But I think it spans across life as well. It's not just about work, really. It's just, okay, putting together. And there is, through that book, an exercise, maybe you've gone through it, which makes you reflect back on your life and what were the key moments that have defined you as a person. And it is such an interesting exercise to do because there's so many things that are there that you've never thought about, that you've never looked at through that lens. And they just define who you are and why you have the beliefs that you have. And I think that's super important.
Yeah, I think the fascinating and really interesting part with that as well is when you then go and share it and test it with other people and sort of get some feedback from friends on it, and they either totally agree with you or they might go, yeah, no, I don't see that so much. I think it's more this. It's a fascinating exercise to go through.
Absolutely. And it just gives you a guiding light, right? It's just what you aim for and what you're doing and why you're doing it for. And I realized so many things I didn't know about myself before, I never thought about, and it made so much sense.
Yeah. So when I asked that question, you said from a leadership perspective. So is there another book that's really had a big impact on you, or you find yourself recommending a lot that's maybe not solely focused on leadership?
Not that I can think of, no. I'm sure there is, and I'm sure particularly at a younger age, there are quite a few things I read that really had an impact, but I can't think of any on top of my mind.
Okay. And final quickfire question. What is the one item that you would say you couldn't live without? Or to rephrase the question, which is how another guest answered it, what's the one thing or item that if it was lost or broken, you'd immediately have to go and fix or replace?
It's a really good question. I'm not a materialistic person, so I find it I put very little importance on objects I own, apart from when they have a sentimental value. And sadly, to go back to your point about replacing it, when it's sentimental, you can never replace it. So that's a really tricky one. But the one thing that comes to mind that hopefully will never get stolen, I don't know how they would do that, is my oven. Because I love eating, I like cooking, I love cooking, and roasting and baking are a big part. I think I would be lost without my oven. I know it's sad, but right. it's just the truth.
So I sense that's very much sort of part of your relaxation and balance as well, right? And kind of how you keep the energy by cooking and baking.
Yeah, exactly. Teaching my kids bad habits of baking cakes.
It's a life skill.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been lovely chatting to you, Melanie. It's been really, really interesting learning about some of the practices you do in the business and the team development and the focus you just put on building a great environment where people are learning and growing. So thank you very much for your time and sharing your insights. I've loved chatting with you, and I'm sure guests will get so much value from it. So thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Likewise.
So there you have it, folks, my conversation with Melanie Chevalier. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed chatting to her. But as always, I really hope there are some actionable tips and ideas that you can take away and straight away apply to help make you an even better leader and to take your team and entire business onto better and better things. If you are getting value from the podcast, then please, could you do me a small favor? Head over to Apple Podcasts, click on the show's main page and scroll all the way down through all of the episodes until you get to the bottom, and you'll see a rate and review section. On the right-hand side, there should be a little button you can click on that says See More, which will enable you to leave a 5-star rating and a really short review of the podcast. And if you are able to do that, remember to take a screenshot of your review, email it directly to me and my team on chat@ben-morton.com, and we'll reply giving you a discount code, a 100% discount code for my online weekly planning protocol program. That's it for this episode, folks. If you've got any questions you'd like me to ask guests in the future, or any guests you'd like me to try and get on the show, do also send me an email to that same email address. Other than that, I look forward to talking to you again for the next episode of the podcast. Until then, stay safe and lead on.